Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson, and today's podcast is going to be a little bit different than usual, more for me than for anybody listening. Usually on Fridays when I record the podcast, Dr. Richard Marshall is here with me. He's still out. I had a wonderful message from a listener asking about how he's doing, and he's doing very well. His recovery from the surgery is taking a little bit longer than we anticipated, but we're hoping that he will be back and ready to go next week without any problems. So we're keeping our fingers crossed. I'm talking to him every day, and he seems to be in much better spirits and seems to be doing pretty well. So hopefully he'll be back and ready to go next week. But this week, for this podcast, of course, I am working to manage three or four things at the same time. While I'm talking, going to cover the topic of today's podcast and broadcasting live on Mixlr and trying to record in a couple of different formats, both for video and for the audio podcast. I'm kind of juggling things a little bit this morning, so hopefully I'll be able to keep my focus and not have too much dead air of no information or anything going out there. So today's podcast is going to be all about independence, but not just independence, the importance of bridging independence and self-sufficiency. This is really an important time of the year to talk about this because, of course, most of our high school seniors just recently graduated and will be moving on and making that transition from adolescence to adulthood. And we're really hoping that they have the skills and attributes and abilities to make that successful shift. While most adolescents, while most seniors in high school are pretty independent. They can come and go as they please. Most of them can drive and go where they need to go. The issue of self-sufficiency, though, is a little bit different. And so we want to make sure that we talk about that from the perspective of how do we as parents plan and prepare our children for that transition to adulthood in a way that's going to help them to be self-sufficient and to be able to start off their adult years on a positive foot. Now, remember that, you know, our primary goal as parents is to raise emotionally and mentally healthy children so that they can then become emotionally healthy, mentally healthy adults. We sometimes work really hard for reasons that are a little bit confusing, but we work really hard sometimes to keep our children small, to keep our children dependent upon us by doing everything for them, and we get into these battles with our kids sometimes unnecessarily and oftentimes to their detriment. And so, again, that's what today's podcast is going to be all about. Now, children begin the process of gaining independence and working towards independence very early. We've talked in previous podcasts about what happens in the toddler years when children begin to enforce their perspective, enforce their opinions, you know, the use of the word no and the commands that they make, the insistent or their insistence on doing things for themselves and doing things the way that they want and wanting what they want. Is all the very rudimentary developmental pieces of independence. And so it starts very, very young. Now, of course, at that age, children are not self-sufficient at all. You know, they know exactly what they want to eat, or at least they think they know exactly what they want to eat, but yet they can't prepare it themselves. They can't, you know, they can't go to the store and get it. You know, they just don't have the ability because they're, you know, toddlers. They don't have the ability to be self-sufficient and to do the things that they need to do to be self-sufficient. So when we talk about this independence early on, really the goal from a developmental perspective for kids is to differentiate themselves from others. You know, if you're in a situation where everybody is doing everything for you, or say your mom is doing everything for you, well, there really then isn't a difference between you and your mom. You are, you know, closely tied to your mom in such a way that if it weren't for her, you wouldn't be able to survive. You wouldn't be able to do anything. And of course, in infancy, that's obviously critical. That's important. But as we get into the toddler years, as we get into the early childhood years, children have that innate drive to separate, that innate drive to be different, that innate drive to be their own person. And it is that drive that reinforces and fuels their need for independence. Now, the way that that differs from self-sufficiency is that being self-sufficient suggests some level of competence. It suggests some level of having a set of skills that allows you to perform a particular task, or it allows you to meet certain expectations that either you set for yourself or that others set for you. So being self-sufficient suggests a level of skill acquisition that certainly is not the same as just being independent. Being independent is great. It's exactly what's needed. But we need to take that independence and bridge it into self-sufficient, a sense of self-sufficiency. Now, that is really critical during those early developmental periods, from early toddler years, 1.5 to 2 years of age, all the way through adolescence. So as soon as our children begin to develop and show those signs of independence, we need to find, as parents, ways to give them opportunities to build skills, to build their competence, to build their sense of self-esteem, self-confidence, and of course, self-sufficiency. Now, these opportunities are going to fall into a couple of different categories. For some, there's going to be skills that your children acquire very quickly, and they have the skills, even from an early age. So we're going to call those situations, those opportunities, situations where your child is competent. They already have the skills, and they're already able to perform what we need them to perform or what they want to perform. The second category is what I'm going to call marginally competent. I'm borrowing these words from some of my legal work, because that's how we refer to individuals who were wondering if they can participate in the legal system. We call them competent, marginally competent, or incompetent. So incompetent, or I'm sorry, we're still marginally competent. For marginally competent, what we're talking about is these are situations where the children have some of the skills, but they certainly haven't mastered all of the skill. So they're able to do a part of what we need them to do, but they just can't do all of it. And we're going to talk about each of these individually. But the third category is incompetent. And so this is a situation, of course, where the child has none of the skills, doesn't have any ability to perform what we need them to perform, or perform really what they want to be able to perform. Now, despite where the child falls in these three categories on any particular skill, that doesn't change the child's insistence at times to do it themselves. You know, many of you as parents, we experience this regularly, where our children insist on doing something themselves, despite the fact that we know that they can't do it. We know that they just don't have the skills. We've either seen them attempt it before, we've seen them in similar situations, or it's just a skill that's beyond them. We know that they aren't able to do it, but they still insist on doing it. So that independence at times creates some conflict, and that's why it's so important that we talk about it, because it's the conflict that it creates oftentimes can be avoided, and usually can be used in a way to bridge those skills or build those skills for your child in a way that is going to help reinforce them into the direction of competence. So let's talk about these three areas, these three categories that kids fall into with the various skills. The first is competent. Clearly, there are situations where our children have skills that they've mastered already. You know, they are able to do these things. They're able to perform the tasks that they want and we need them to do. And so, by all means, if that's the case, let them do it. You know, if your child can tie a shoe, for example, let's say he's 3 or 4 years old and he already knows how to tie his shoes. Well, even though it's much faster if we do it, even though it's usually maybe a little bit better if we do it, if your child has the ability to tie his shoes, let him tie his shoes. Have him tie his shoes. When we do those tasks for our child, even though they have the ability to do it, we begin to strip them of their confidence. We strip them of their obligations, their sense of obligations, their accountability, their feelings of self-sufficiency. So when a child is capable of performing a particular task, it is critical that we allow them to do it. We need to allow them to perform those tasks. Now, of course, time doesn't always allow for that. So let's use the shoe tying as a situation, as an example. Say you are about to leave, you have to leave the house within 5 minutes, and your child still needs to put on a tie of shoes. Well, if he can do it, but it takes him 7 minutes to tie his shoes, well, then you're going to be late. So in these kinds of situations where time does not always allow us the opportunity to fully allow our child to do what they need to do or to perform the task because they just take, even though they've mastered it, they've taken a little bit longer than it should or could. It's important that we become a little bit more creative during those situations. So again, using our shoe tying as an example, why not in that situation have your child put on his shoes, but tie him in the car, or see if you have another, if he has another pair of shoes that don't tie, that he can wear those Velcro or just slip-ons. The point is, if you go to try to tie his shoes for him, and he resists and he says, "No, I want to do it. I want to do it," which happens a lot to us as parents. If that happens, instead of battling him, pause for just a second and say, is it okay if we do it this way or if we do it that way? Is it okay if I let him put his shoes on but have him just tie him in the car? We can teach him a great lesson that, hey, you know, sometimes when we're in a hurry, we need to do things a little bit differently than usual. So in this situation, let's just put our shoes on and we'll tie him in the car and everything will be just great. So being a little bit creative, looking at those opportunities as ways to teach other skills, as opposed to looking at those opportunities as situations for frustration and to engage in a battle that's unnecessary and usually takes us down a path that's going to lead to a negative day, negative interactions with our kids. So again, when our kid's competent, when they have the skills, when they know how to do it, you know, as many times as possible, allow them to do it. That's just going to strengthen their skills. That's just going to increase their confidence and make them feel better. Now, the second category is marginally competent. And that one is a little bit different as well, because this is a scenario where your child has some of the skills, but isn't able to perform all of the skills. So let's, again, use the shoe tying as an example. Say he can tie his shoe, but because of his fine motor skills and because he hasn't quite got it all down, his shoelaces are a little bit loose. He pulls them through too far, and so he has to do them and then redo them multiple times. Or because they're so loose, they keep coming untied and those kinds of things. So he clearly has some of the skills, but not all of the skills. He still is in the developmental stage. In this kind of situation, we go back to some lessons taught to us by a very well-known Russian psychologist named Lev Vygotsky. Vygotsky talked about the idea of scaffolding. Now scaffolding is a fascinating and wonderful concept that we use in developmental psychology because it allows for the development of new skills and it's sort of a model that parents and teachers can use to help children learn new strategies, learn new skills, and to build on the skills they already have. So it's called scaffolding because like the scaffolds that are used when building buildings and building structures and things like that, the scaffolding is there for support. It's there to help provide a structure or a support for the building that's going up, so that as it's being reinforced and is growing, it will be able to not resist falling down and that kind of thing. From a developmental perspective, the concept is the same, and that is, when children have some of the skills, many parents have the tendency, have the urge, have the need to just do it for them. Well, he can't do it yet, so I'm just going to do it for him. Well, Vygotsky taught us that instead of doing that, what we should do is provide minimal support, just provide a little bit of support, just the support needed to make sure he doesn't completely fail, but enough support so that he can complete the task and find success. So again, using the shoe tying as an example, many times the reason that the shoelaces are too loose is because there's the way that their fine motor strength limits them to be able to hold the knot down while they're tightening it. So as the parent, what you can do is you can use your finger and hold the knot as he's pulling it tight. Now, it seems simple. I get that. But what you're doing is you're teaching your child that he knows how to do it. You're reinforcing that he knows how to do it, that he has the skill that he needs to be able to do it. But you just need a little support. You're just making sure that he does it himself. And you say, you know, well, I'm not really helping. I'm not really doing anything. I'm just going to hold this for you while you do it. What you're doing is you're allowing him to explore, and you're allowing him to try on his own. Whether he's going to be completely successful or not, the scaffolding that you're providing is allowing him to explore and to try and to push his own limits. Many times we use scaffolding and we don't even know that we're using scaffolding. So whether it's in sports and we put our kids in situations where they're guaranteed to hit the ball when they're playing baseball, or we put them in a situation where they're guaranteed to score the goal in soccer, that is all scaffolding. You're teaching them how to use the skill that they already have and put it in a scenario, put it in a situation with just, again, minimal support so that they find success. Scaffolding is a great way, again, to build confidence, to build self-esteem, and to really make your child feel like he's accomplishing the task. And what we find is that when we use scaffolding, kids gain confidence much, much faster than they would otherwise. They are able to quickly go from a beginning level skill performer to to mastery level. They get there much faster when we use concepts such as scaffolding in teaching them. Now, the last category is incompetent. And what I'm talking about with incompetent is this is a situation where your child just doesn't have any of the skills needed. Maybe he has a couple. Maybe he, you know, with tying his shoe, maybe he knows how to hold his shoelaces. And he knows that they twine around each other and twist around each other, but he really doesn't know the patterns or the specific ways in which he needs to do it. And so we would put that into the category of incompetent. Well, these are situations where your role as the parent is very direct, very simple. You're the teacher now. You go from just being a support with the scaffolding idea, from a spectator basically as the in the situation of competent, to the teacher when the child is trying to learn a task or perform a task in which he has no ability. So now if you're the teacher, what you have to do is, again, be a little bit creative, because if we remember the situation that we're in, we're talking about a child who is insisting on doing it himself. insisting on doing something that we know that he is not going to be successful with. So how do we handle that as a parent? How do we handle it when we know that he's not going to be able to do this? Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to be patient. We so often, we get into situations where we are impatient, we are demanding, we pressure, we push, and we put an expectation on our child to hurry and finish the task. Again, knowing we know that he can't do it, but we're trying to get him to hurry because of some time demand, many times the time demand that doesn't even really matter, but a time demand nonetheless that we feel pressured by to push our children to try to get them to perform something too early, too fast, or in a way that is going to create frustration, not just for us, but for him as well. So the first thing, again, is to be patient. We have to pause, we have to look at the situation, and we have to recognize it for what it is. The way that we will exercise, then, this patience is we pause. We take the situation. Again, we'll use the shoe tying as an example. If your child just can't do it, he knows, again, how to twist them a little bit. But nonetheless, he tries and tries and tries, and he insists that he's going to do it himself. In these situations, take the time to say, okay, you try. As long, we're using the shoe tying example, and, that's quite a very specific example, but sometimes your child wants to do things that he can't do, and he may get hurt. And this is always hard to say to people sometimes, but it's okay if he gets hurt. It's okay for our children to get scrapes and bruises and to experience something that causes a little bit of pain and discomfort. That's how we learn. That's how we figure out how we interact with the world around us. So many parents are, they become so reactive when their two-year-old is having a temper tantrum and hits his head on the floor. The parent reacts and responds so quickly and dramatically, and the child very quickly learns, hey, you know what? If I hit my head on the ground, I don't even have to do it very hard, but if I hit my head on the ground, mom's going to or dad's going to respond in the way that I want him to. Well, if we allow him to experience a little bit of discomfort, the likelihood that a two-year-old is going to hit his head on the ground so hard that it's going to cause damage is very, very small. Unless there's a brain disorder or a bone disorder or something like that. But those kinds of issues aside, the likelihood of him really hurting himself is small. As soon as he hits his head hard enough to where it actually causes some discomfort, that will probably be the end of hitting his head on the ground. So when it comes to our children insisting on doing something that he wants and insisting on something that we know he can't do, go ahead and let him try. And again, as long as it's not going to cause any major damage to himself or to other things, as long as there's not going to be any major damage or injury, let him try it. Let him explore it. Let him see what he can do. Now, when he fails, again, assuming that this is a task that he really can't do, this is our opportunity to enter as teacher. And we say, that's really a tough thing to do, bud. Can I show you how I learned how to do it? Now, asking a question like that serves two purposes. First, it allows the child to have to maintain some sense of control. Now, we know that we need to do the task, but by asking, can I show you how I learned it? You're allowing him to say yes or no. Most of the time. Now, there are some stubborn children out there that will want to try multiple times before he will concede and let you do it for him. But most children are going to let you do it. They're going to say, okay. But what you did was instead of insisting, just let me do it. Instead of insisting that you do it, you're allowing him to maintain some sense of control, some sense of responsibility for his life, and accepting that he needs help sometimes. So asking him, can I show you how I learned, allows him to have that control, and it also minimizes the potential for arguments and confrontation and those kinds of things. You know, I've seen way too many parents who are in those kinds of situations and they'll just take it from the child and say, just let me do it, and do it for the child. And it creates crying and emotional responses and confrontation and arguments, and it's all unnecessary. If you just ask, you know, can I show you how I did it? Your child then usually, again, concedes and it'll let you. We too often, and I can already feel some of the responses I may get from some of these comments. So many parents feel like, well, I don't need to ask my children anything. I tell my kids what to do. Well, I get that. I understand that. And you know, many of us grew up in those types of homes. But did we have to grow up like that? Was it necessary for us to grow up like that in an environment like that to end up to be healthy, mature adults? Probably not. We probably didn't need that type of authoritarian type of parenting. We would have ended up just as well, perhaps better, emotionally adjusted in a better way, had we had the opportunity to feel like we maintained some sense of control over our lives and our situations when we were, you know, growing up in those scenarios. So asking if you can show how you learned, giving your child that opportunity, it really is going to increase their self-esteem and their sense of self. The second thing that it does is arguably more important, is at least just as important as giving him that sense of control. That second thing is, it lets your child know that you once were unable to do it. Now, remember that depending on the age of your child, you are the expert. You are the one who knows how to do everything. This is one of the reasons that our kids challenge us so often. You know, if they see you as being the expert, well, to challenge you and to do something better than you means that they have surpassed the expert. So that's why our kids oftentimes want to race us, and they want to challenge us to different games and to different contests because they're wanting to take on the expert. Now, remember, as they get into school age, the expert shifts from not just the parent, but also the teacher. And so now the teacher becomes an expert as well. But at this point, what we're talking about is, if the child sees you as the expert and you convey to him, let me show you how I learned. This was tough for me to learn too. Let me show you how I did it. What you're saying is that I was once in your spot. I was once in a position just like you where I didn't know how to do that either. Let me show you how I learned, because if I show you how I learned, then you can be like me when you grow up. Now, this is a potentially powerful message to your child. A powerful message that lets them know that while you can't do something right now, that's perfectly normal, because here is this expert, this person who seems competent in almost everything that he or she does. Here's this expert that once couldn't do it either, and look at them now. And so we have this tendency, or this opportunity, I guess, where the parent can teach the child that gaining this sense of competence is critical to their development. Now, whether the child knows this completely and it has a full awareness of this, probably not. But the more you do it, the more you say those kinds of things, the more you offer your child those kinds of opportunities, those kinds of situations where they can explore that and they can hear you say things like, let me show you how I learn. Let me show you what works for me. Let me show you how I do it. You're teaching them that here is a lesson, here is a strategy that I used to accomplish this task, and I'm going to hand that down to you. That, I think, is one of our obligations as parents. That is something that we have to do. We have to have that handing down of information, that handing down of knowledge from parent to child. And we do that best as teacher, not as an authoritarian, not as a dictator, but as a teacher, as a person providing you information so that you can learn and become a better, stronger, more skilled individual. So with these three areas, competent, marginally competent, and incompetent, depending on where your child's skills are, your responses clearly are going to be different. Again, if he's competent, let him do it. You know, even if there's time demands, time restrictions that don't allow you to give him ample opportunity to do it at his pace, be creative. Figure out other ways to go around it, other ways to help him and allow him to use his skills without taking control, without taking over. With marginally competent, again, let him do as much as he can do. That scaffolding piece is so important. Let your children, again, it's tough for people to hear sometimes, but let your children fail sometimes. Let them experience the discomfort of not being successful. But then provide the scaffolding, again, in this marginally competent domain, provide them the scaffolding that they need to take the skills that they have to the next level. Allow them to push their skills so that they get better and better. You know, one of the things that we use in sport very often is the idea of just free play. In most sports, we do scrimmages, for example. And so these are game-like situations where, the score may be kept, of course, because it's sport, so we always keep score. But we have scrimmages that don't really count for anything. So it allows sort of a sense of relaxing so that a kid can go out or a player can go out and try things that they've never tried before. They'll use the skills they already have, but those types of situations, those types of scrimmages are scaffolding-like in that they afford the child the opportunity or the player the opportunity to explore and try things that they've never tried before. The coach can put them in a situation or they can put themselves in a situation where they push their skills to the next level. They may fail. They may fail often. But when they keep trying, again, what we know from sport is that the more that they push themselves, the more that they try things that they've never been able to do before, the better that they get. Even if they fail, even if they aren't able to do it, the more that they try, the better that they get. And so that's why that marginally competent is so critical, that we provide our kids the opportunities to try and with just, again, that minimal support and assistance. Then the last area with incompetent, again, our role is very straightforward. We're teachers now. We have to teach our children how to do the skills, but do so in a way that affords them the opportunity to maintain their sense of self, maintain their sense of identity, and all the while, hopefully, working to strengthen their self-esteem and how they feel about themselves and their situation. All right, well, that is it for today. Hopefully, we'll be able to take some of these things. You'll be able to take some of these things and put them into work with your child. To help them bridge from being independent to being self-sufficient. Now, just want to throw out a couple of quick reminders with the parenting book that we have out, the Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child, Part 1, is Behavior Management. It's available on Kindle right now for $2.99. It really is a great deal. There's a lot of information. There's four chapters. It's all about behaviors and what to expect in your child at different developmental stages and what to do about it to prevent normally challenging behaviors from becoming abnormally impairing behaviors. So check out the book. It also gives you access to lots and lots and lots of resources that we have online, additional readings, additional worksheets and things like that you can use to implement the strategies in your home starting today. Also, the Elimination Diet Manual. It's available on Kindle for 99 cents right now. It's a great tool, a great instrument for helping you to explore the ways in which your diet may be influencing your physical and mental health. In a little bit over a month, you can take out the things from your diet that are potentially causing you some stress and problems. You can take those things out, see what your body responds well to, what it responds poorly to, adjust your diet, and see a renewed level of energy, a renewed level of being stress-free in your life. So that's another great tool that's out there. Also, you know, if you listen to us on iTunes, please write a review. We've had a couple of reviews come through, and they're fantastic. We love hearing from others. Check out our blog, thementalbreakdown.com. We have a couple of forums on there for parenting, but also forums for various mental health issues, as well as just general how do we set our goals? How do we find accountability? How do we maintain work on a path that gets us to where we want to be in life? So check out those forums, our blogs, and lots of information out there at thementalbreakdown.com. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully, Dr. Richard will be back next week so that he can share with us some of his insight about various topics. And, well, we can get an update on how he's doing again, hopefully next week. So until then, I'm Dr. Bernie. Have a terrific weekend. And forget to be afraid.